You mentioned the war years. Now, you would have been four when it started, or three and a half, thereabouts.
Yeah.
What do you remember of the war years and how that affected the area of South Perth?
I remember very, very clearly the day the Japanese aircraft was spotted over Fremantle, because Forest Street, and others will say this, Forest Street, we were ordered into the trenches which had been built, and the trenches with the cork in our mouth and all that sort of thing. And I remember seeing my father's Rio Wolverine coming down Forest Street and turning into Angelo Street, and then me being hauled out of the trenches to go home, because my father had actually built an air raid shelter in the house, which is a story, and all the neighbours had collected in this air raid shelter, which was built in the house. I can remember that very clearly, and I can also remember being part of the construction of the trenches, because we went down to the Chinese gardens and got the large sugar cane, and a lot of the trenches were lined with the sugar cane, and I can remember that very, very, very clearly.
I've not heard that they were lined with anything. Describe the trenches to us.
They would have been, they had obviously had entries where you didn't climb down into it, they were angled, you walked down into it, and then you, I'm just trying to think how tall I would have been in those days, but obviously standing up, a child had vision on the ground, so it wasn't as though they were 6 or 8 feet deep, and they were wide enough for a person standing side on, and they were just pole just lined, and these things were slipped in, and other materials as well, but the sugar cane is one thing that I remember very, very clearly in those trenches. Very
they clearly. Were zigzagged, I understand.
They were zigzagged, yeah. Mm. And they were on the corner, the trenches, I mean it's all changed now of course, but the trenches were actually in the school grounds on the corner of Angelo Street and Forest Street, in that, because that was all sand there.
What were you being taught? What were you being told about the war?
My recollection, nothing. But the big thing for us, of course, was the Catalinas. Because the Catalinas were, in fact, attributed to the cracking in our house, which eventually had to be underpinned. Because I remember very clearly, now looking back, I would say that the Catalinas used the spire of the Roman Catholic Church as a point, and you could hear them coming, and we would run into the street and you would see the Catalinas come down, and then you could go into the house to the veranda and see them sweep round Perth Water and disappear under King's Park. Now, I remember on one occasion, and probably the records would show this up, but on one occasion this Catalina came and it was in a bad state. Only had one engine going, and it was obviously shot up, and we weren't allowed to go near it, but I believe my father said that it actually landed in Como Water. It hadn't got to the base on the other side of Matilda Bay. It only made it as far as Como Water. But you could hear them, and on some occasions they came so low over St. Columbus that in the street standing up you could wave to the pilots and they would wave back. That's how close they came over South Perth.
Mm. Amazing. And I've heard them described, well, you describe a Catalina in flight from a young child's point of view.
A big duck with two engines and a stub nose. It was just like a big flying, well, to me, recollection, a big flying duck. And I think the sad thing about it was that after the war, the records would show this, that out the back of Rottnest is the Catalina Squadron. They flew them from Matilda Bay offshore and pulled the plugs and sunk them. So out the back of Rottnest in deep water is the Catalina Squadron that was based at Matilda Bay.
It's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm.
You're mentioning, obviously, the war, and I've heard that there were, you know, there were trenches, there were precautions taken within the community. What are the other precautions do you remember?
I remember the school, we had to bring newspapers from home, and we had to actually paint the newspapers and put them over all the windows. And that was one of the things we did at home too. Actually, all the windows, all the glass was covered with paper that was stuck on with like paper mache, particularly the school. That was all done from that point of view. The other thing from the war years, we were all issued with, which I've still got mine, we were all issued with the tags with our blood group on them. And we had to, we wore them to school. Other precautions, no, other than the day that they spotted the Japanese aircraft, no, I can't...
People talk of blackouts and...
Oh, yes. Oh, we had blackouts. But then again, after the war, we had forced blackouts too, because the... From our house, you could see the East Perth power station, and there was a gasometer. And of course, the gasometer went up in level, so you'd know what was coming. You'd almost predict when the blackout was coming. And my father used to call the East Perth powerhouse the East Perth Our House, because there'd be 2 hours on and 1 hour off, with far as the as far as the power was concerned. There were a lot of not blackouts, as in total blackouts, but blackouts caused by the availability of electricity.
The precautions in the area, I've heard that there were sirens, air raid sirens, yes, to yes, warn people.
There were. The sirens were on a garage in Canning Highway, and you could hear them from Forest Street State School. When they put the sirens on, you could hear them. You could hear them that far away. And there was another lot at Como. But certainly, you're quite right, there certainly were sirens in the area. And they were very, very audible. Very, very audible. You couldn't say that, that you didn't hear them.
Mm.
That's for sure.
And people talk of the war, sort of being a bit slow at the beginning, and it was a long way away. But then from 42, you've got the Japanese, and you mentioned the Japanese threat. Mm. A serious threat.
Mm.
A serious business.
It was, but I don't think in those days that we were really made aware of it. But of course, in the latter part of the war, the Majestic Hotel in Applecross, which was eventually bought by Alan Bond, the Majestic Hotel was the headquarters for the Americans.
What do you remember of the Americans? You would have been a young boy of, sort of 5, 6, 7.
I remember them particularly going into Perth. I remember them being present in Perth and Fremantle, because my family spent a fair amount of time in Fremantle. But I can remember the Americans, and also I do remember the British Navy was here too with the submarines, and there was a supply vessel called the Adamant. And how it happened, I don't know. But I can remember going on board one of the British submarines on Victoria Quay. There were two of them parked side by side on the supply ship. And I think after the war, a lot of the British sailors kept touch. We had a friend of our family that kept in touch for years and years and years with the British sailors of here, not the Americans, the British. But they had submarines here.
Mm.
And they came to Fremantle for resupply. And one of the supply vessels has been mentioned in documents was the Adamant. Don't know the name. I don't think the submarines had names in those days. Mm. But no, the Americans, they were very present. They were very visual in town, the Ambassador's Theatre and places like that.
But attractive for young chaps, I believe. They would have all sorts of prizes to give them.
Oh,
Coca-Cola
No. The biggest thing that they had, which we didn't have, was chewing gum. And we had never seen it before. It was chewing gum it was the strip chewing gum in the long strips. And to be given a packet of that, I mean, now it's every day, Wrigley's, whatever. But in those days, to be able to actually have that type of chewing gum, you thought you were $1 million if you had a piece of that chewing gum.
Huh.